when I flew back from London, like the plane was three quarters empty, and there was like nobody in economy, basically, and except for like three people, and one of them was sitting in my seat. And he was like a rabbi. And I was like, "Hey man, it's my window seat." He's like, "No, this is row 37 or whatever it was." I was like, "No, that's 38. 37's right there." He's like, "Oh, sorry, yeah, it's not very clear." It's like, "Yeah, it probably won't matter in the end, but just in case, could you please move?" And he did. And he sat in front of me the whole flight, but I did feel kind of awkward, knowing that I could have just taken any window seat.
Right.
But then, so you can either be an asshole like that, but when Sam and I went to go see the James Bond movie, and you know how like movie theaters now make you buy
Reserve seats. Yeah.
reserve specific seats. So like when we got there and people were in our seats, so we were like, well, we'll just go sit somewhere else. The movie's about to start. Anyway, we got moved three times during the movie because everywhere we sat, people showed up and were like, hey, these are our seats.
Oh
And we
boy.
kept having to move. So,
That's tough.
yeah.
That
And
was.
at the end, James Bond dies. So it's like,
Oh,
what a
well.
terrible 2.5 hours.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry.
Thanks for flying Southwest, and we hope to see you back real soon.
Very, very, very happy that the best sport in the world is back in season.
Feels good every time. Every spin, I scream louder.
Brian, I know we're all football guys and football guys, guys.
Yeah, I'm a football guy.
Jordan dropped Marcus last week, so.
Oh, God, Jordan!
I have a lot to say about this.
So, this is the best time of the year for us.
Psych!
Welcome to the Semi Products Fantasy Football Podcast. It is the last episode of 2021 of the fantasy season. I think it's the second podcast in 2022, but that means just one thing: the award show special. It marks a long 17 weeks of the NFL fantasy season being done, from a draft night in late August, early September, to the championship matchup coming down to the final Sunday of the season. It certainly was a season to remember. NFTs coming soon. Joining me on the pod this week, league co-commissioner, off-season trivia podcast host, noted enthusiast of the British royal family and the Great British Bake Off, and most importantly, the 2021 Fantasy Football Semi-Products League champion. Welcome onto the pod, an official two-time member of the league, Jalen Yeager. Pip, congratulations on your title.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. It means a lot. And it's good to be back on here. Another awards ceremony. One of the favorite pods of the year, in my opinion. Just a good way to wrap things up after another fun 5 months, another or tortuous 5 months, depending on how it went for you. But for me, the last 2 years have been very fun. So
I've never had fun playing fantasy football. Not once. It's always ended awfully.
It has.
So it's not great for me.
One day you'll be hosting this and you will have won the league and you'll be able to feel what I'm feeling at the moment.
And I'll be 85 years old and talking to everyone's grandkids.
Yeah. 11 of us, all 11 of us will be dead by that point. So you'll literally be in the league with just 11 grandkids who have no idea what fantasy football is.
Right. They only understand it as the thing that makes their dad mad. And like, yeah. I've got Fronik and his three kids are working three different teams in the league and they're co-conspirating together to make sure that one of them wins. I'm out here still just really trying every single year to keep up with the new social media app, to converse with everybody, trying to, no, let's go back to the snake draft, guys. Snake draft, please.
Kickers. Let's do kickers.
Kickers, guys. They kickers. Haven't been in the NFL in decades, but yeah. I'd love them to be in fantasy. I think it'd be fun. Naming my team after guys in the early 2000s and just getting called a Zoomer boomer or whatever dumb thing that old people are going to be called in 60 years.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
It's going to be fun. I love getting old and the thought of it. It's super cool.
Oh boy, what an adventure. So we are here for the award show. It's the thing that you voted on. It happened a while back. So you kind of know what we're going for here. I should also say ahead of time, there isn't going to be a season-long montage because I do not have the time that I normally have to do this, either working at a radio station where I pretend to do work, but I'm doing this, or last year when I was unemployed, most notably editing the pod and the montage during the insurrection. Was quite an adventure that will always be burned into my mind.
It's one of those things where you always remember where you were, and you're going to be telling your grandkids one day that I was editing this montage for a fantasy football podcast that we used to do, which had literally 12 listeners.
Grandpa Rick, what's a podcast? Oh, well, kids, thanks for still calling me Rick. I'm glad we're really letting that one live on. All of my friends, if they were alive, would love to know that I'm still called Rick. That was quite a moment of just kind of like sitting on the couch and seeing everything going on and being like, what is this? This is strange. And I'm just listening to just bad take after bad take after bad take. And then like a funny moment.
And yeah.
Yeah. It's what an adventure.
It certainly was. Yeah. Shame no montage, but certainly understandable. You can just put the NFL countdown music underneath the whole thing, just on loop.
Anyways, back to congrats on the win. Do you have anything to share, anything to say? You were across the pond when it happened, and I believe asleep. So that had to have been an experience to know waking up and knowing that you had won the league again in a foreign country. Are you worried that it possibly doesn't count because you were outside of the contiguous United States? In another country, on another continent, even.
True. It puts me and Kyle Pitts in great company, where good things happen when we're playing in London. I don't want to really talk about it too much. I already have said it to most people, but definitely feels a lot different to the last year's win. Just how it happened and not being able to watch was pretty frustrating, I guess, in the end, not being able to experience that like winning moment like I had against Fronik, where the Diggs touchdown won it for me. That was like kind of like you blogging or editing during the insurrection. I will always remember that Stephon Diggs touchdown against the Patriots, but I guess I'll never forget waking up and finding the Wi-Fi and seeing that I won by less than a point. So it's just a different feeling, but it's kind of wild that I was able to do it. So certainly happy and looking forward to trying to three-peat next year.
Wow. Truly uncharted territory. Speaking of Kyle Pitts, it has been 411 days since he has caught a touchdown in America. Leading us to let's get to our first award of the evening. We will start with best valued draft pick. We had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 nominees in this category. And let's do some live producing. Should I read them in a random order and then announce the winner, or read from their least to most votes gotten?
Read a random order and announce the winner.
All right. The nominees are, let's try and do it this way. Cooper Kupp for $27 for Scott. Then we have Deebo Samuel for $11 for Pip. After that, we have Jalen Waddle, $5 for Scott, who alphabetically, I believe, comes before Jamar Chase, $11 for Brandon, and our last nominee, Tom Brady, for Jordan's team, getting 0 votes. I think I definitely was looking at two different awards when that came through, because I wrote down Tom Brady, Team Leonard Fournette, 0 votes.
Leonard Fournette was also a nominee. Right?
Okay, I think that's what it was. 0 votes. Okay, so that's what it was. And the winner of Best Valued Draft Pick does go to Deebo Samuel for $11, receiving 6 votes. Pip, you picked a winner. Congratulations.
I did. Thank you. Yes, $11 for the wide receiver 2 on the season. And Only 9 players had more rushing touchdowns than him this year. As a wide receiver, he had more touchdowns than Najee Harris, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, and Aaron Jones. So that was obviously clutch. Crucial for me because I kind of whiffed on OBJ and my Julio picks, which I wasn't that surprised about. I didn't love those picks at the time. So getting the number 2 wide receiver from Deebo for only $11 was fantastic. I'm not going to act like I expected him to finish in the top 12 at the wide receiver position, or let alone the top 2, but definitely worked out for me. And he was just amazing. He was so much fun to watch.
Yeah, he really came on. Like, I think it was kind of like your thing when you would come on where it's like, and nobody's really talking about Deebo Samuel and how good he is. And it really felt like the last like 6-7 weeks when they were just like, okay, he's our running back now. And the Niners kind of went all in on it, was not only when the Niners took off, but like his star really started to shine bright. So, I think if there's a second half MVP, it would probably go to him, while the first half was probably very easily Cooper Kupp. So yeah, very, very good pick. I would imagine he goes somewhere in the $50 range next year.
At least 40, you got to think so. I mean, just seeing how Shanahan used him, so rare that coaches just like game plan for their top player to just get them the ball no matter what. Doesn't matter what position they are playing.
Right.
Shanahan was just like, we need to get Deebo the ball because he's so good, which was clutch. I mean, everybody wants a Niners wide receiver a Niners running back because you know that they're going to get used and they're going to be very valuable. Problem is that you just never know who it's going to be. And, you know, it could have been Sermon this year. It could have been Mostert, could have been Mitchell. And, although Mitchell did very well when he was healthy, Deebo managed to stay healthy all year. And when Mitchell went down and one of the other guys went down, not Hasty, Jeff Wilson, I think. I don't know. There's so many possible running backs.
Too many Niner running backs. Yeah.
Because he went like 2 or 3 weeks where he only had 1 catch a game, but he was getting 10 carries, always scored a touchdown, and it was huge. So just crazy, unpredictable. You know, he's had an injury history in the past. That's why he went for so cheap. And I don't know, it managed to work out. I will say honorable mention here, Jamar Chase finished 2nd with 4 votes. So that was a great pick for Brandon. I know that his value dropped prior to the draft because he had drops in the preseason or something stupid, which just, you know, is kind of ridiculous because now we see his talent and how good he was. And he started off so hot and then kind of went through that down spell at the end of the season. But then just went off in the playoffs. And if Brandon had a little bit more of a stronger team, then, you know, he would have been unstoppable with Jamar Chase. So very good pick for Brandon there also.
Yeah. That leads us next up to the other end of the scale, the worst valued draft pick.
Yes, the worst valued draft pick. We had here 7 nominees. We had, starting off with Allen Robinson, $31 for Brandon. DeAndre Hopkins, $35 for Rick. Saquon Barkley, $49 for Andrew. Julio Jones, $20 for me. Darren Waller, $30 for Duncan. Miles Sanders, $23 for Tim. And lastly, Christian McCaffrey, $68 for Fronik. And we have a very clear tie here. Mm. Interestingly, 6 votes apiece for Christian McCaffrey, running back 39, cost Fronik $68, and Allen Robinson, wide receiver 86, cost Brandon $31. So that is the tie between Allen Robinson and Christian McCaffrey for the 2 worst value draft picks in the 2021 draft.
I didn't realize, I knew Allen Robinson wasn't great. The Bills were not spectacular. I don't think I realized how low he was ranked
for the Bears.
Bears? Did I say the Bills?
You said the Bills.
Yeah. No, I meant the Bears.
Okay.
I really haven't talked about football in the last couple of weeks here. Yeah, I guess we could just say to how bad Robinson was. Henry Ruggs, noted murderer, finished as the number 82 wide receiver on the season. Nelson Aguilar, who I think only had like 4 catches, was wide receiver 67. Oh boy. Yeah, there are just some bad names that are still out there on the waiver wire that finished just so far ahead of where he was. So that's tough. But yeah, Christian McCaffrey, I think, is now officially injury bug guy. Guy you can't trust, guy who won't play a full season going into next year's draft. And I'm not saying this as somebody who hopes to get him as an RB2 for $30 so he can play all 17 games and be RB2 on the season. That's not my strategy here at all.
Good luck getting him for $30 next year.
Oh, well, no, that's the thing is but the narrative is that he's hurt and he can't play the whole time. So you're drafting, you don't want to spend too much money on a guy who's basically just going to be a flex at the end of the season, right? So, you know, save your money on, you know, good players.
Right. Right. Like Allen Robinson.
Again, you know, new offense. I mean, another offseason to work with Justin Fields. I think that's going to be a great decision for Fronik to make.
Yeah. Yeah, this was an interesting vote. It's the argument when it comes to draft busts, you know, do injured players, should they count as busts or not? Because, you know, injuries are just unlucky. But when you spend $68 on a player, you obviously expect them to play more than Christian McCaffrey did. You know, he's coming off an injury year, so that's a big risk. But I guess the mindset going in is like, oh, well, you know, last year he had his big injury plagued year. Let's just hope that was 1 year. He should be fine this year. Now it's become a trend. So that's unlucky for Fronik. But Robinson, on the other hand, was just plain bad. And for $31, one A-Rob could have bought you at the draft. And I know this is kind of a ridiculous scenario, but one Allen Robinson could have got you Deebo Samuel, Jalen Hurts, Jalen Waddle, Hunter Renfrow, Leonard Fournette, and Darnell Mooney. All of those guys combined went for $31. So that's pretty damn good team. That's the wide receiver 2, the quarterback, whatever. Hurts was, I mean, he was one of the best all season. Jalen Waddle was top 15. Renfrow was top 10. Fournette was a top 10 running back. And then Darnell Mooney was just the better wide receiver on the Bears. And I think that was one of the strange things that Brandon mentioned to me during the season. It's like, it'd be one thing if the Bears offense completely sucked, but Mooney was a viable option at wide receiver and Robinson just wasn't the guy. It was Mooney all of a sudden. So it was definitely very weird.
It's a tie is interesting too. Like, I, looking back on it, I think I voted for McCaffrey, but hearing for how much like Waller went for, I feel like he probably should have gotten a vote. I think Saquon was just slightly more productive to not steal away from votes from McCaffrey. He certainly went for less money. Maybe, I mean, Hopkins wasn't good enough when he was healthy, I think, to be considered like worth the money either. So I don't really know. But yeah, a tie. Who gets the award? Do we split it in half? Do we, is it one person cuts the other picks kind of thing?
Yeah, fight to the death.
Perfect. Perfect. Let's now get to the best draft, the people who possibly picked those players. We will have here Scott, then Jordan, nope, then Mike, then Jordan, then Jared, then Mike, then Luke are our six nominees. And the winner for best draft here goes to Scott, who had six votes, who basically had Cooper Kupp and was able to make him work with, for a very short amount of time, a flourish in the pan with TD Henry and Alvin Kamara, and had won 5-6 in a row to start the season before things went bad. And everybody was again amazed that Scott is good at fantasy football, which he is very good at drafting for fantasy football. This is a fact.
Scott, probably the most obvious beneficiary of the auction draft, just killed it the last 2 years. I'm probably not alone in thinking that Scott would have won the league if Henry didn't get hurt. I think a healthy, full potential Derrick Henry with Kamara as your running back two, with Kupp, and then even beyond those guys, you know, Deontay Johnson was essentially Kupp light with his consistency. He tied with Devontae Adams for second in targets in the league. So that's, and I think he finished wide receiver 9. Waddle got better as the year went on. He finished wide receiver 15, I believe. So there you go. You got three awesome wide receivers that finished in the top 15 at their position, including the number one wide receiver. You have Henry, who was going to break records if he stayed healthy. Kamara, $57, probably a little bit of an overpay for Kamara, considering how injured he was. But when he was healthy, you know, he was playing very well on a horrendous offense for the most part. And then like getting Kirk Cousins for $1, who was a serviceable quarterback until the end of the year when he kind of struggled a little bit. He still ended up as a quarterback one. Really the worst pick Scott made was Kenyon Drake for $7, and the rest of them were good to great. So
yeah,
props to Scott. He did an awesome job at the draft.
He just, I mean, like, we really just let PPR machine JD McKissick go for $2 and just like nobody care. And not even at a point of the draft where it's like, oh, everybody's only like really strapped for cash. And Scott was lucky enough to had $2. Like, it was right in the middle of the thing where he picked them up. So, I mean, it's just, man, he got in a series of four picks, he got Cole Beasley, Devontae Parker, and AJ Dillon for $11. Yeah.
Even AJ Dillon, like at the end of the year, he was really good and kind of taking over that backfield.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills, like, we don't talk about defense, but getting the Bills defense, who finished like number one or two on the season, for $1 super late in the draft, like, great pick. Scott is very good at buying people. I don't know what it is about him, but he's just good at it.
Quite.
At the other end of the scale is Pip's favorite thing to do, which is talk about the worst in the league. And that leads us to worst draft.
Yes, the worst draft. Our four nominees were Tim, Fronick, Rick, And Duncan, this was a bit of a runaway with 9 votes. Duncan was voted the worst draft. Phronik, you received 2 votes. Rick, you received 1 vote. Yeah, unfortunate there. But yeah, Duncan, oh, well, where do we start here? Just looking at Duncan's draft, if you're listening and you haven't looked at it recently, I would recommend sitting down before you do. Where the hell is it? There it is. Curtis Samuel. Started off here with Justin Herbert, $17. That's a very good pick. From there, though, Zeke for 50. Zeke finished with the RB6 on the season, which I was surprised at. But
feels like an accident. Zeke didn't mean to be good this year. And like the Cowboys were just fine most of the time. And like he just got a couple, like he just got goal line carries is kind of all he is.
I did hear on another fantasy football podcast, which I listened to.
We don't talk about those here.
We don't. This was the second lowest scoring running back season in the last 20 years. So,
wow.
In total. And that's probably due to the injuries to McCaffrey, to Dalvin, to Kamara, to who was the other guy that was taken at the top?
Henry.
Henry, thank you. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So all those guys got injured, you know, so a little bit lower scoring, probably more backfield committees going on there. But yeah, Zeke for 50, he finished the RB6, but just not what you wanted there. Darren Waller, I definitely dodged a bullet here. I really wanted him again. But Waller for $30, he didn't even finish in the top 15 at tight end, which is a pretty weak position to begin with. So that was unfortunate. You had Gus Edwards get hurt before the season starts. He spent $25 on him. And then this is where it really gets ugly. These 3 receivers that Duncan spent $42 combined dollars on: Kenny Galladay, Robbie Anderson, and Cortland Sutton. Whew. I mean,
now, to be fair, he followed it up by like 2 picks after spending $16 on Cortland Sutton by getting Big Mike Will, made it for 4. So, you know, that worked out. But he waited until essentially, I mean, he got his running backs, and then his wide receiver 1 going into the season was going to be Kenny Galladay on his team. And that is just kind of a recipe, but team maybe would have been okay if Gus Edwards doesn't get hurt, but that is still a throbbing gigantic hole in your roster for those 3 wide receivers at the start of the year.
Yeah, definitely throbbing. A lot of blood there. I mean, Mike Williams for $4, that's a great pick. He finished wide receiver 10, but he did nothing after the first like 6 weeks, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get to these, like those first 5 weeks of the season is kind of decision-making point for a lot of people, where it's like, do this guy that's never been that consistent in the past is suddenly going off. Do I keep him or do I trade him? Duncan chose to keep him. I mean, didn't work out, obviously. Yeah. I was kind of in the same situation with Debo. I chose to keep him. I mean, it's so hard to trade a guy when they're like top 5 at their position. You just hope it works out. Unfortunately, Williams fell off a cliff, and I mean, he was Duncan's best receiver all season, but just so inconsistent that you couldn't rely on him. But yeah, just rough draft.
Yeah. And I think with some of the other guys who got worst draft votes, I think you could say maybe like the strategy of it didn't work out, so it looks really bad. Like with Phronik basically being like, okay, I have 2 guys and then I really need to hit on everything else, and it kind of didn't. I think that's kind of what you're doing there. I'm not sure if Duncan necessarily had a great strategy going into it, and I feel like this is where the auction part of it played a huge role, which is like, second pick of the draft, you just throw a monkey wrench into the thing. Hey, here's everybody's favorite quarterback, Justin Herbert. Like, waste some money, you fools. And yeah, your plane just went to shit. Like, everybody's did. And yeah, I think for Duncan, that's kind of the hole he fell in.
For sure.
And wrote it to having to dress like a clown and walk around Portland for a weekend. At the other end of after you draft, then you start to pick up players and you start to see how they do. And picking up players is a big part of the season. So we're going to best move of the year.
Shh, be quiet. It's time for the Good Night Warren Moon Sleeper of the Week.
Receiving no votes at the bottom end here is Scott drafting Cooper Kupp, Jared picking up Hunter Renfro, both of those got 0 votes. Receiving, I think it might have been 1 vote. I didn't actually write it down when I took my notes. Great job. Is Pip trading James Conner for Julio Jones? Coming in a tie for second is Luke picking up 10 barrel Patterson, got 3 votes. Also tied for second is also Luke trading for Devontae Adams. But our best move of the year with 4 votes, inching it out over the line, is Pip making his trade for Mark Andrews from Mike with 4 votes for best move of the year. Another award for you, Pip. The rich get more awardier.
Good night, Warren Moon. Sleep well.
Yeah, I'm surprised I won this. Personally, like the James Conner trade, I liked more. But I'm also surprised that Devontae Adams trade didn't win this as the best move of the year. But here we are, Mark Andrews. The two tight end train was unstoppable with him and Kelsey. And he had huge weeks in and before the playoffs, which is where it just really paid off, especially when Kelsey went out with COVID. So having Mark Andrews to just slide into the tight end spot was huge for me. But I think some insight on this, what led up to this moment was I spent $41 on Dalton Schultz as a waiver wire pickup at one point. And this was fairly early in the season, maybe in the middle of the season. But as soon as I picked him up, and I wanted him because I really wanted to trade him at some point to try and get one of those top tight ends. And I took a gamble that he would be good. Obviously, he ended up as the tight end 3. So even if I kept him, it probably would have been fine. But I wanted to turn him into a stud tight end or some other position. And I kept trying to make moves and it just wasn't working out. And then I made this trade with Mike to get Mark Andrews and Schultz. He finished tight end 3, but after that trade, he kind of like disappeared for a few weeks and it was huge, just perfect timing for me. He wouldn't have had the same amount of value. I probably wouldn't have been able to make that trade. Obviously Mike was going through his stuff at that time where he was feeling desperate and he needed to make a move or felt like he needed to make a move. So just the timing on it was perfect. And yeah, so that was, I mean, my plan there just worked out. I was fortunate to be able to get some value for him, for Schultz and getting Mark Andrews ultimately, I think was probably maybe the biggest part of me getting the win.
Yeah, I think it's definitely playing the result there of if Luke wins, it's probably 1 or 2 more people vote for him and he ends up getting the win for best move. So there's kind of like no wrong move there. It's really more of a testament to Luke being the good fantasy manager GM that he is of being able to have 2 nominees. To end up in the running. So that's big as well.
For sure. They're all great moves. I mean, the Adams trade for Luke is pretty much the same thought process as I was going through when training with Mike, and that was just take advantage of him. Scott drafting Cooper Kupp was, he went in a bidding war with Jordan. He won and it worked. The Renfro pickup for Jared, $0, just a steal for, a guy that was so consistent, so good all season. So props to you, Jared, there. Obviously, Luke's Patterson pickup. And then my trade for James Conner for Julio. And Julio was terrible and had zero value. And then James Conner ended up as the RB5 or 6 and second in the league in touchdowns. So that just paid off too. So, yeah, all very good moves.
I want to live in a universe where Scott has 27 extra dollars on this draft to spend, and I want to know what he spends it on instead of Cooper Kupp. Because Cooper Kupp was pick 66, and at that point, Scott hadn't picked anybody in 45 picks when he got Derrick Henry.
Oh, my God. Well, that was the thing, right? He spent $100 on
109 of his $200 in the first 20 picks, and then just sat around for like an hour and a half before Cooper Kupp showed up. I would have loved to have known what Scott would have done with that $27 and that long between picks, because I think it would have broken him. I think if he had gone into like pick 67 and he didn't have somebody, a third player on his team, I think he would have realized, I think I might lose this year. And then he would have just drafted Raiders, and then it would have been just like Scott is normal, and like Scott of the snake draft era. So I want to see what that universe was going to be like.
Yeah, crazy.
So after best move, well, we kind of have alluded to it, but we're going to not worst move, but most uneven trade of the year. We've talked about a lot of them.
Yes. Most uneven trade of the year. The nominees were James Conner for Julio Jones, Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown for Emmanuel Sanders and Dalton Schultz, and Davante Adams, Rashad Bateman for Terry McLaurin, Rondale Moore, and Marquez Callaway. This was a blowout. 9 votes. The leading winner here is the Davante Adams for Terry McLaurin trade. So congrats to Luke on winning the most uneven trade of the year.
Or congrats to Mike for winning.
I mean, yeah, it's a shared trophy.
Sure.
Yeah.
With an uneven, it's 3 weekends at Luke's and then a day at Mike's and then 3 weekends at Luke's, kind of on and off situation there.
Exactly.
Yeah, that trade was shocking and bad. That was a scary moment for I think the anti Luke crowd in the league, of not wanting to see the most victorious member of the league continue to win. Was not a great moment when he was added to that roster of Justin Jefferson, Keenan Allen, and Davante Adams were your big 3. With all of the depth that Luke had put together as well on his team. So it somehow like didn't work out for Luke in the playoffs, which is probably got to be the most frustrating thing on the planet. But he managed to do it. So.
Yeah. The rich get richer with this one for sure. I crunched some numbers here. So the trade happened week 7, which it's probably earlier than you would think, but this happened week 7. So Mike, I believe, was 2-4 at this point. Davante Adams just got COVID. Mike needed a win, and he decided to make that trade. So so week 7. So we play to week 17. Rick, do you want to take a guess on how many? So excluding Bateman, Rondale Moore and Marquez Callaway, because those players were basically a wash. Looking at Adams and McLaurin, which are the 2 big centerpieces of this trade, you want to guess how many points each of them scored from week 7 onwards?
I will say that Davante Adams scored just under 100. And scary, okay, Terry.
But I'm going to stop you there.
Okay.
So this week 8 to week 17. So it's 11 week period.
11.
Nope. Weeks. That's 9 week period.
9 weeks.
Sorry.
Well,
9 weeks. So you got to So do the math here.
All right. So I'll go. Let's go. Devontae then 120 and Scary Terry 55.
No.
Oh,
you're close with McLaurin. Close-ish.
It felt right. Yeah.
So with 9 weeks of play, Terry McLaurin scored 71 points. I know Mike traded McLaurin for Pittman, but I looked at that numbers and they were very similar. So however you want to do it, but McLaurin scored 71 points, which is under 10 points a week. Devontae Adams scored 164.4 points, which is almost 100 more points than McLaurin, and is, 15 points a week, essentially. So just a huge gap in the numbers between these two players, and props to the voters because they picked mathematically the most lopsided trade. So
a couple hundred points that Mike could have used down the stretch rather
probably than... Although, for Mike, we didn't talk about it in the opening, but he won again in the toilet bowl.
Oh, right.
The third straight year. So essentially Mike is no different to you or Jared or Brandon or Jordan, just chilling, And so you could argue that this trade worked out for Mike because he didn't finish last, but just so uneven.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's what he's going to say, right? Is it wasn't such a bad trade that I lost the league because I still won in the end because Duncan's team was riddled with injuries and just kind of flawed from the get-go. And he's trying to run a band and go to school and run a business. So he maybe wasn't incredibly focused on fantasy as 100%. I guess Mike has to be a lawyer, which maybe is just as much work. I'm not sure.
Allegedly.
Well, there we go. And I guess after the most uneven trade of the year, we have a positive award for Pip for you to bring up, which is best pickup of the year.
Yes. Best pickup of the year. I am looking for a waiver pickup of the year. There it is.
Waiver pickup. Yeah.
Waiver pickup of the year. Yes. This was a good one. A good vote here. We had Scott picking up Amon-Ra St. Brown for $19. He was on fire at the end of the year. The sun god himself. Myself, Deontay Foreman, picking up for $0. Myself also picking up Tyler Conklin right before the finals for $0.
The magic conch.
The magic conch. Yeah.
Tyler Conklin.
Yes, Monsieur Conklin. Okay.
Magic conch. Uh-huh. Oh, so you want to go to find the magic conch. Uh-huh. I see.
Next one is Ante Renfro for $0 for Jared, who ended up as wide receiver 11. But the winner, almost unanimously, was Luke, 11 votes to 1, Cordarrelle Patterson, $3, ended up as the running back 9.
Yeah, 10 barrel, that like week 3 through, I want to say like 12. Nah, that's a little too long. Yeah, maybe like 4 through 12, something like that. That mid stretch of the season where it was just like, oh, the Falcons found a guy that they can do fun things with on their offense. And actually, oh, it turns out he's the only thing they can do on offense. It definitely looked like that was just going to be, oh God, like Luke's worst player right now is whoever he has to fill in at tight end. And, or who was it? Like one of his worst players is TJ Hawkinson because the Lions are bad, but he's still a target machine. And you're just like, oh, so nothing's going to stop him then? That makes sense. Okay, great. Lovely. A big fan. He was amazing. And I can't believe that I'm so smart at watching football that I thought Mike Davis was going to have a great year after week one. What an absolute idiot I am.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
pretty dumb.
Yeah, just casually picking up the RB9 on the year. Luke did for $3. You know, it's a huge part of Luke's success. You look at our draft, you had Antonio Gibson go for 36, Nick Chubb go for 54. Luke drafted the Hare for $34 all in the draft. And Luke picks up the RB9, who was better than all three of those guys, for just $3 on waivers. So, you know, every year there's that one running back who becomes a waiver hit. Last year it was James Robinson. And obviously, huge part of getting Luke to where he got to. Obviously, Patterson did go a little bit downhill at the end of the year, which probably, you know, if Patterson's playing like he did at the start of the year, Luke wins in the finals. So that's probably pretty frustrating for Luke. But yeah, overall, just a fantastic pickup. I don't know. It's not like he came out of nowhere. Like, he had a good first week or two before he was picked up. So I'm not sure how that one slipped through the cracks.
Was he picked up the same week as Elijah Mitchell?
He was picked up September 15th.
Okay, so that's the same day the waiver that Elijah Mitchell went for $72 to Jordan. And Elijah Mitchell was the RB25 on the year. He ended up missing a ton of more games. Had a couple, 3 weeks in a row where he scored at least 10, two of them getting over 17 points. So that was, you know, pretty solid. But, you know, you think you found your guy on the waiver wire in Mitchell, and you spend all your money on him. And of course, classic Moneyball Luke gets the better player for less. But
yeah. And it's not like Mitchell wasn't a bad pickup, but
no,
when you compare it to Patterson the exact same week for that amount of money, it's pretty stark.
Like eight times the dollar. No, way more than eight times the dollars. Like 24 nine times the dollars, the amounts of monies. Yeah, big pickup. So those were more good players. We'll keep talking about some more good players as we get to Fantasy Player of the Year. I think there were only three nominees for this one. We have Cooper Kupp, Deebo Samuel, and Jonathan Taylor. That is how they were alphabetically ordered, and that is also the order that they went for the voting. Cooper Kupp, wide receiver one on the season, averaging 21.6 points per game, gets 7 votes. For Scott as the Fantasy Player of the Year. He was a monster. He is my favorite LA Ram of all time. Him and Matt Stafford. I'm getting matching tattoos of their game-winning throw when they beat Tom Brady on my butt cheeks from one side to the other. for taking down touchdown Tom. I kind of struggled with this one. I really wanted to go Jonathan Taylor. I'm not sure if I did vote for Jonathan Taylor because there was only one of us who did it. And I think DraftKings has odds that it's minus 350 that Fronik did that because he would never vote against his son. I don't know. No one really stood out this year as being like elite and dominant. And I guess Kupp obviously was that guy, but maybe because Scott kind of struggled that he didn't shine as bright. I don't know. It was a tough choice for me, a real Sophie's choice.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess, you know, Deebo was fantastic, but what Cooper Kupp did, when you look at the numbers, was incredible. So Deebo, so good. Loved having him on my team. Cooper Kupp scored 67 more fantasy points than Deebo Samuel. That's the difference between the wide receiver one and the wide receiver two.
Oh.
67.
Yeah.
In addition to that, Cooper Kupp had 1 week under 10 points. He only had 2 weeks under 15 points.
Huh.
He was on fire all season. Like touchdowns every week, at least 10 targets, it seemed, or at least 10 catches at a minimum. Like, dude was on fire. And I lost to Scott early in the year, and Cooper Kupp, like, was just kept getting the ball. He scored like 2 touchdowns, and it was so frustrating to play against Cooper Kupp. I mean, you can't say enough about him. Just such a good player this year.
Yeah, he was amazing. I'm not sure if our league will ever be like first guy off the board is a wide receiver, because I think everybody's still just like, no, getting the elite running back is way more important. But like Kupp should get like Zeke Elliott money, if not Christian McCaffrey money, for this year, for this upcoming draft, because he's like, I don't know, Matt Stafford with like a couple extra games in the playoffs to learn the offseason, or learn the offseason. He's going to learn in the offense in the offseason. They're like throwing in, probably going to sign Odell for super cheap or something. You know, they've got the weapons out there to be able to fucking do whatever the hell they want. So
yeah,
why not let Cooper Kupp continue to be that guy? Good for him.
Do you have the Niners or the Rams this week?
Let me see what I am officially rooting for. Pardon me. I've become not an addict to gambling necessarily, but I am addicted to wanting to win gambling.
Yeah, dude.
So I'm rooting for, George Kittle to have more than 40 receiving yards, the total to be over 37.5. The Rams to cover the first half spread getting 5.5, and the Niners to cover the spread full time plus 7.5. I've gone in with a same game parlay with a lot of really low odd things that could happen. And that's what I've gone for.
The Rams 5.5 in the first half.
Yes. I think
that will be your downfall.
You really think the Niners will be up by 7 at the end of the half?
Is it Rams
plus 5.5?
Oh, Rams plus 5.5.
Yeah. And then at the end of the game, it's Niners plus 7.5. I dug into the alternate lines to just get a bunch of dumb things so I can win the parlay.
Gotcha.
I'm just trying to build a really big base going into the Super Bowl so I can have first quarter, first half, third quarter, full, you know, fourth, second half bets, player props. Yeah. I basically want to, from start to finish, be staring at my gambling app, watching me lose the whole time, because that's how I'm going to find the most fun in all of this.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So real quick, who do you want to see in the Super Bowl? Like, what's your matchup? It's got to be Cincinnati against the Rams, right? Is it for you?
That would be the most fun, because I think the defenses aren't great. So you would actually end up with like a really high scoring, fun Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Where I think I said to like Andrew or Jordan on Sunday, I was just like, oh, so we're getting a Niners Chiefs rematch this year, aren't we? And, you know, it'll still be a fun high scoring game, but like, I don't think the Niners want to be a high scoring, fun, fast offense. And I think they're going to learn to be able to figure out a way to shut down Mahomes. I think that one would be kind of a letdown. The problem with a Niners Bengals Super Bowl is that both teams look best in their all white uniform, and you can't have that in the Super Bowl. So the Bengals would have to like wear, they do something dumb, like wear black jerseys and orange pants, and it would just be a vomit fest.
I would like the weird thing is that the Bengals have made the Super Bowl twice, and they've played the Niners in both of those Super Bowls. So it'd be really weird to see the Bengals in the Super Bowl again, having to play the Niners for the third time. Like, I don't know what the odds of that would be, but I don't care. I don't really care, Niners or Rams. I think I probably want the Niners because I don't love Stafford as a human, and I definitely don't like his wife. And I think Jimmy G is fun, and I would love to see the chaos, what happens in San Francisco to Jimmy G and Lance if they make the Super Bowl. But 100%, I'm all in on Cincinnati, Houdet gang, you know, Joey B. They're fun. I'm buying a jersey. I'm going on record saying it right now. If Burrow and the Bengals make the Super Bowl, I'm buying a jersey. And I might even go all in on the Bengals. They might be my team because I'm still, although it was very fun watching the last weekend's games as a neutral, it would be fun to hop on the Bengals wagon at the moment. So I might do that. And then also just to be the antagonist at Shaw family Christmases, since they're all Browns fans. So,
wow. You could get a little house divided flag. How fun would that be?
That would be very fun.
Wow. I Googled Matt Stafford wife, and whoever runs or picks the picture that goes up like on the Google page, did Mrs. Stafford, Kelly Hall, a huge favor by picking the ugliest photo of Matt Stafford.
Look. Oh God. Yeah. What he's got is like mid-2000s long haircut.
He's got mid-2000s long kind of shaggy hair. He looks like he's fresh out of like a weekend long super binge of him drinking. He's got the neck beard in full force, and she looks great. She's super happy, looking very pretty. I'm sure that's why they picked the photo, but boy, it helps that Matt Stafford looks like just like a guy who was paying to like have his photo taken with like some C-list celebrity like actress.
Yeah. I had that hair in high school. That was my, I think a lot of people probably did.
Have that exact
hair. I had that exact hair in high school.
Wow. Oh boy. Yeah, so that's fantasy player of the year then.
Yeah, congrats, Cooper Kupp.
Did it. At the other end of the best player is the worst team. Pip, tell us about the smelly butt team of the year.
Yes. Oh, boy. Well, Tim, Brandon, Fronik, Rick, you didn't receive any votes. Not surprisingly, Mike, you received 2 votes. Probably because you blew up your team and was pretty terrible after that point, but the winner is Duncan.
Smelly butt, 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 smelly butt.
That's one smelly butt.
Won this award because he didn't make a name change during the season. That's always good for team morale. Some wild stats on Duncan. He scored over 100 points only 6 out of the 17 weeks on the season. I did some math. The average score this year was 115.1 points per week. That was for the whole league. Duncan scored more than that average twice.
Ooh.
And he lost one of those. The only time he scored more than that and won was when he played you, Rick.
Oh.
The other time, I think he was playing Scott. But yeah, only 2 weeks. Whoa. Speaking of high school, going through puberty. Only 2 weeks where Duncan scored higher than the league average, just a low scoring team. So that puts you in a bad position to win each week.
Yeah, that's, it's not good. I'm sure he wishes that he had a season where some of the guys that he picked to start the year, stayed healthy. Probably specifically Gus Johnson. nope. Nope, it's not his name. Buck Johnson.
Down the sideline. Here I go. Step back. Got it.
The next Fox promo should be Gus Johnson playing football, calling himself playing football. Oh, God. Yeah, he probably wishes that... a couple of those guys were healthy. He probably would have liked either Zeke Elliott or Tony Pollard to have gotten hurt, because then he didn't have to start to both of them. Like, he needed to, because that was basically the only thing he could do. But if Zeke gets hurt and it's just Tony Pollard, like, Tony Pollard has that much more value. Maybe you trade him and flip him, or maybe he gets that many more carries. Tony Pollard's probably better than Zeke Elliott at this point anyways. Or if, you know, if Pollard gets hurt, then Zeke is absolutely like a rock star number one guy that could save you down the stretch if it, you know, possibly could have. And instead you had to start both of them as RB one and two, and the triple tight end train into the last week of the year is no way to go about that. It's just it's a bad luck.
Yeah, I think the weird thing about Duncan's fantasy teams every year is that he is either horrendously bad or a title contender. There's no in between with Duncan. He's never your 6-7 or 7-7 now. Just like fighting for the playoffs. He's either flying high or down at the bottom. So I don't understand how that can happen, but here we are. So hopefully, Duncan, next year you're either middle of the road for the first time ever or really good.
Yeah, that would probably be it. I think Mike certainly played himself into potentially being the worst team of the year. I think if Mike had lost, it would have been interesting to see how this vote turned out, because I think we all saw how bad Duncan's team was, and points wise, how bad he wasn't doing. So it probably cuts it a little bit closer, maybe to a tie. I'm not sure. But that would be a fun alternate universe to live in.
I think Mike probably wins this award if he finishes last, because I mean, he would have completely, it would have been his own downfall.
You know? Right. Yeah. Just kind of throw it all away.
Maybe we should start doing these awards like the Heisman Trophy, and we vote like multiple weeks left in the year.
Ooh, before we all know. That'd be fun. And then we make cases throughout. We vote at the end of the regular season, and then we all make cases for why we should be doing it throughout our playoffs, and then reveal it after.
Mm-hmm.
Just to further show how dumb we are and how much we know about our own league would be
fun.
I have two more categories. Is that correct? Have I gone? Did I miss another one?
Let's see. We should just have podcast guest and best GM, right?
Okay. Yeah. Then Pip, tell us about as a guest. Let me tell them about the best podcast guests of the year.
Yes, the best podcast guest of the year. This is a big award, and I think a lot of us strive to win this award. Everybody was nominated except for Duncan, unfortunately, because he never was able to make it onto the pod because he has this weird thing called a life and a career.
I also was not nominated. I thought that was rude.
Well, Rick, you know, you won in my heart best podcast host of the year.
Would have been nice to have had it be a category. I would have liked to see people vote for me. Would have been nice to, I would have come away with at least two votes as opposed to just one. So that would have been something.
Yeah. Rick, you did an excellent job as usual. We didn't get you a Stugatz video, mostly because we thought your effort this year wasn't as good as last year. So, you know, you weren't really deserving of a cameo like that, but you did fine.
I was unemployed, so I had more time to try.
I know, I'm just messing with you. You did an awesome job. Thank you for taking time out of your week all the time to host this. Anyway, back to podcast guest of the year. This year, we have a brand new winner of the award. It was a very tight vote. But the winner with four votes is Tim Thompson. Congratulations to Tim of Medford, Oregon. You are voted the best podcast guest of the year.
You did it. Tim was great on the pod. Everybody's great when they come on the pod. They all do some good fun things. I think when was it Tim came on and then, oh yeah, Tim and Froelich in the Medford Bowl when they just bashed the shit out of Mike and like caused Mike to come back by essentially dropping a lawsuit on them. That was probably one of the more fun podcast moments of the year. And that's all thanks to Tim, slightly also in part to Froelich, but I think Tim was the leader of absolutely just ripping open Mike's chest and then pooping on his heart. That was phenomenal. Tim's, yeah, very good, very strong performances. A good guest when he came in on the Zoom or in person. It's a good insight. He gets the show. It's a great vote, everybody. You picked a winner.
Yeah, for me, Tim won it when he said Froelich played Dynasty in a redraft league. For me, that was the quote of the year. I threw my vote at Tim after he said that immediately, for sure. He just put the nail on the head there. But yeah, like you said, everybody was fun to listen to, and everybody did a fantastic job this year. But yeah, Tim, congrats.
Now, welcome into the Zoom, Tim Thompson. No, I didn't. I didn't plan that out. That would have been funny. Okay. Well, that leads us to our last award of the year. It is GM of the Year, four nominees. Here is how things broke down. Jordan got one vote. Scott, no votes. And the top two teams, they were in the championship. They battled it out for at least 2 weeks this year. I don't think you guys played three times. So you battled it out twice in the title. It came down to less than a full point, and it came down to a vote of one full vote. Winner of GM of the Year with six votes is indeed Pip. Pip, congratulations. This is the domestic double. It's the equivalent of winning the Carabao Cup and the Premier League in soccer. The President's Trophy and the Stanley Cup, the baseball equivalent of the best team of the year in the World Series. You take home the two big ones. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, everybody that voted for me. Feels good to be the winner of this piece of metal.
Hunk of metal.
This hunk of metal. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I thought Luke was going to win this for sure. So definitely honored that people voted for me. My team was not as good as last year. I think Luke put a better team together from beginning to end, and I got a little bit lucky in the finals. But I made a few good moves throughout the year. It worked out. And, with my trades, for sure, the Julio for Connor trade, which was kind of slammed at the time by a few league members, was, a great trade. And then also the Mark Andrews trade. But really what I'm most happy with was that in the playoffs, I made the correct starts. When I beat Scott, I had Dalvin, Kelsey, and James Conner all out. So three of my top three players for the year. And I won that week due to Mark Andrews, after acquiring him, randomly starting Joshua Palmer, who I picked up like a day before the game. He scored a touchdown when Keenan and Mike Williams were out injured. And then also I spent $24 on the Eagles defense in November when nobody else bid for them in preparation because their playoff schedule was, I believe, Washington, New York Giants, Washington.
That's correct.
And I was convinced that somebody was going to, it was a Wednesday too. It wasn't like a random waiver day. But yeah, spent $24 on them. That first week against Scott, they scored me 18 points, which was super huge. And then in the week that I beat Luke, again, a random day, I just picked up Dante Foreman I picked him up on a Sunday night. I had Ronald Jones. I think it was when Tampa was on bye, or they were playing on a Monday night or something, but I saw Foreman was available. So I dropped Jones after all the games were done on Sunday, picked up Foreman, and Foreman in the final scores 19. Mooney went off that last week. He scored over 16 points when I drafted him for like $2. And we've talked about the difference between him and Robinson on the season. Then also literally could have started anybody else on my bench after James Conner was declared out on the final game of the season. He was questionable going into it. He was declared out. And if I had started anybody that was on my bench, I would have lost, but instead I decided to pick up Tyler Conklin with a little bit of advice from a anonymous friend who helped me give me the advice to pick up Ty Conklin, and I picked up Ty Conklin and it just worked out. So the stars aligned in the playoffs, where even though I was not fully healthy and certainly wasn't as dominant as the year before, I just made the right moves and they paid off. So yeah, pretty happy with that. I think that's what I'm most happy with this year. So again, thank you to everybody for voting for me. And also congratulations to Luke on another excellent season and a job well done. He's going to be back. He'll probably be in the finals again next year. Good luck to everybody again next year. Also should be a very competitive season as usual.
That unanimous friend is, of course, our best friend, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
He told you,
you prayed. He said, pick up the magic conk. And that's what it was. So congratulations to everybody who won an award. Congratulations to everybody who got votes this year. Congratulations to all of you for participating in a very fun fantasy football season. It is officially over, which means I hand the reins now over to Pip again, because the feud's coming back. So this is now your beast to drive and to take charge of. Until you decide that you don't want to host a pod show or a game show every 2 weeks, and then you make Jordan come on and give out wrong answers to questions.
Yeah, maybe this year we'll know the USC Heisman winning players. We'll get a clear answer on that we're lucky.
We'll just use Google more efficiently.
That'd be a good talent to learn if you are Jordan Archer. But yes, the feud is coming back. I'm happy to announce that the feud in 2 weeks, so this is the week prior to the Super Bowl, we will be having our first episode, and Jordan, as the defending champion of the feud, is locked in. So we will be looking for two competitors to compete against Jordan in the first episode of the feud. We're just going to be having some fun, you know, some dumb questions, dumb categories, games, therapy sessions, whatever you want to do to get us through the summer and life. So, the feud, it's coming back 2 weeks' time. If you want to be on the first episode, please text me. As always, it's first come, first serve. If you want to write some categories, then they will be featured in future episodes. I will be completely honest. I have been so excited to start the feud again that I have written out every single category and question for the first episode already.
Wow.
I have been very bored at work, which is totally fine because I'd rather be getting paid to write feud questions than do my actual job. So some very fun categories, and it should be a good time. So yeah, 2 weeks, text me if you want to be on. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing whoever is on the episode, and send me categories if you have them. If not, I will see and talk to the rest of you guys on a future episode of The Feud anyway. And Rick, once again, thank you again for doing the fantasy football pod all season. You did an excellent job balancing this and work for the first time in your life. Must have been really good. So
it's tough.
So you you just did an awesome job. It's always fun to be on the pod, and I think I speak for everybody when I say that. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing everybody over the summer, and we need to plan out a draft weekend. We need to think of a Duncan punishment, lots of stuff to do.
Very many things. Well, thank you all for a fun season, and I will talk to you in this capacity officially in September. So have a good trip. See you next fall.
Bye.